As Grant and Domi strode into the jump chamber anteroom, Grant was unsurprised to find that Kane, DeFore, and Bridget were already there. So was Bry, speaking gravely to Kane.
I'm figuring it out, and here's what I got so far. I've run two diagnostics. Though I found some circuit damage to a couple of the secondary support systems, the unit itself checks out fine. Just wish I knew the modulation of the matter stream which brought you here. If I could analyze the frequency, I'd have no doubts whatsoever.
Doubts? What kind of doubts?
Nothing serious. Bry is still confused about the quantum path we traveled to arrive here from England. I've already told him that he can't analyze the event frequency until Lakesh decrypts the memory disk.
You found the access activation code for the Cobaltville unit?
It was in the database. I've already programmed it into the target lock coordinate scanner.
What about the way Lakesh rigged the target auto-sequence initiator? Is that still intact?
Don't worry about it. The Cerberus jump lines are still out of phase with the other units in the network. Your origin point will be untraceable.
That's a small edge, but it'll have to do.
His black armor was identical to Grant's, except the red badge was missing from the pectoral. Only a couple of weeks ago, during the Sour Idaho op, Salvo had personally pried it off. Now, a decision made on bitter impulse might hold lethal repercussions. Mag badges were keyed to photoelectric field sensors that gave the officers unimpeded access to all divisions, all levels of the monolith. More than likely, the frequencies of their badges had long ago been deactivated, but knowing from experience the cumbersome pace of Vill bureaucracy, a slight chance existed the codes were still active. In addition to that worry, the tiny image-enhancing sensor mounted on the forepart of Kane's helmet did not function. Connected to the red-tinted visor, it intensified ambient light to permit limited night vision. The microchannel feeding the signal to the visor had been damaged in Idaho, and there had been no time to repair it before their mission to Britain and Ireland. Though the likelihood of finding themselves in complete darkness was slim, Kane had stowed a Nighthawk microlight and a pair of mag-issue dark vision glasses in the compartments of his belt. Affixed to his left wrist by an expandable band was a miniaturized motion detector. It was made of molded plastic and stamped metal, and the top face consisted of a liquid crystal digital display window. Kane had appropriated it from an officer of the Grudge Task Force. The small device wasn't standard magistrate issue. He assumed it was of pre-dark origin, found in COG stockpiles, then hidden away by the Barons during the program of unification. Lakesh had stated that only a fraction of 20th century tech was available, even to the Vill elite. Grant watched DeFore run a final check on the contents of the medical kit lying open on the table. She wore the powder-blue bodysuit of Vill Medical Services. The left breast bore an embroidered likeness of the ancient Caduceus symbol, two snakes intertwined and facing each other around a leafy staff. Grant gazed at the symbol, feeling slightly uneasy. After his encounter with Lord Strongbow and his dragoons, he had hoped to never again see any scaled creature that slithered and hissed.
There's not much point in discussing tactics. Though the administrative monolith specs were in the database, they didn't include A-level. I've only been there once, and I didn't have much of a chance to look around. I don't know the location of the gateway unit, but if we can find our way from there to the Baron's reception area, I'll be able to take us to a hidden lift that we can use to reach E-level. I doubt there's much business at this hour, so the only opposition is the Baronial Guard. They're show soldiers, and as far as I know, they're not even armed. If we're lucky, Grant's badge will get us through the checkpoints.
And if we're not lucky, and we're cut off from the gateway?
There's a secret way down to Tartarus, but we'll have to reach the Enclaves, the fourth-level living quarters, to get to it. Any questions?
Millions.
I'll answer one.
If Lakesh is still alive, but too injured to move, too far gone for medical treatment, what should I do?
A heavy silence draped the room. Eyes shifted back and forth.
Euthanasia.
It's the only logical recourse. If we can't bring him back, we'll have to silence him.
That's not why I made the suggestion.
I know.
He slipped on his helmet. His eyes were masked by the slightly concave red visor, and only a portion of his mouth and chin was visible. He made sure the copperhead at his belt was within easy reach.
You're running the show, Kane, but I want a couple of promises from you. I want your promise you won't go after either Baron Cobalt or Salvo. If we bump into them, that's a different matter. Our mission is to get in and get out. A penetration, not a vendetta.
Grant, you'll have to watch him.
Grant was aware that he could do very little to control Kane when the man's warrior heart beat hot and fast. He owed Salvo and the Baron a debt, and only blood could wash it clean. Brigid stared after him, eyes bright with worry. Grant felt a pang of sympathy for her. She didn't know Kane, not really. Certainly she had witnessed his melancholies, his humors, his angers. But she had never seen him as juggernaut of vengeance, so crazed by berserker fury he was willing to die in order to deal death to his enemies. If the proximity of Salvo or Baron Cobalt triggered that fury, Grant knew he could do little to contain it. Kane was as likely to chill him as the objects of his hatred if he tried to stop him.
Brigid, don't worry. I'll look out for him. He'll come back to you.
That's not what I'm worried about.
Whatever you say.
They approached the gateway unit. Right above the keypad and coding panel, imprinted in faded maroon letters, were the words, MATTRANS, entry absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel. Even Lakesh didn't know who the B-12 cleared personnel had been and what had become of them, though he had opined they had probably jumped from the installation after the nuke, desperately searching for a place better than Cerberus, and doubtlessly not finding it.
I hate these fucking things.
He glanced toward DeFore, who took deep, calming breaths. Though her face was composed, her eyes darted back and forth, up and down. She had only made one MATTRANS jump before, when she had fled Ragnarville 3 years ago. Domi, who possessed only a bit more jump experience than DeFore, appeared as if she were about to nod off from boredom. Kane stood stiff and grim, facing the door, not looking at his companions. The hexagonal metal discs above and below exuded a shimmering glow that slowly intensified. The fine mist gathered and climbed from the floor and wafted down from the ceiling. Tiny crackling static discharges flared in the vapor. The insubstantial tendrils thickened, curling around to engulf them. None of them felt any pain, only a mild shock, and then a dissolution as deep and as dark as death. During his years as a hard contact field magistrate, Salvo often wondered about death, since it could come unbidden at any moment. He knew pre-dark religions were cluttered with contradictory lore regarding the immortality of the soul, rewards, punishments, heavens, hells, purgatories. While none of it made any sense to him or had the slightest impact on his day-to-day duties, he still found himself in dark, private hours contemplating the means and manner of his own death. A bullet to the brain was preferable, he figured, to being maimed, say, in a deathbird crash. With a bullet, 1 second he would be alive, and in the next second he would not. That manner of death was elegant in its simplicity, and he approved of it and gave it no more thought. As for the manner, he presumed that it would take care of itself. Now he found himself devoting more emotional and mental energy to the subject than ever before. He knelt on the carpet before Baron Cobalt, still tingling from the shock stick's voltage. A sharp pain stabbed through the side of his neck. He didn't need to pluck out the tiny hypodermic to realize a guardsman had shot him with a dart gun. Nor did he need to wonder why his entire body went limp within 3 seconds. The drug, coursing through his bloodstream and scrambling his nervous system, was a synthesis of chlordiazepoxide and carbachol. It was the same stuff he had used on Brigid Baptiste and Kane a couple of weeks before in Idaho. He also had administered it to Lakesh just 3 days ago. The compound had been developed by the intel section of the Magistrate Division for crowd control in the instance of another pit uprising. Salvo had appropriated it for the Grudge Task Force. He might have smiled at the irony, but his facial muscles no longer worked. Although he breathed normally and was entirely conscious, he had no control over so much as a single toe joint. It was not an uncomfortable sensation. His body was numb and barely responded to tactile sensation. He doubted he would react even to a continuous shock stick assault. Another pair of guardsmen appeared, and they dragged him effortlessly away from Baron Cobalt and the smirking Abrams. His heels dug shallow grooves in the nap of the carpet. They pulled him through archway after archway, then down a tight, narrow passage that was more tunnel than corridor. Salvo knew very little about the layout of A-level. As the Baron's Aerie, it was a place of mystery. He had heard it was a labyrinth of connecting chambers, hidden passageways, and secret rooms, deliberately designed as a fortress within a fortress. In the unlikely instance of assassins reaching the top level of the monolith, they would never be able to find the Baron before they were discovered themselves. The passage opened into a small dome-shaped chamber. The guardsman laid Salvo down on the smooth floor and arranged him in position, flat on his back, with his arms close to his sides, feet together. He noted that there were barely 6 inches between the curving walls and the crown of his head and the soles of his boots. The two guardsmen backed out of the chamber, into the narrow mouth of the passageway. Dully gleaming steel clamps came up out of disguised floor slots and seized Salvo's wrists and legs. 2 more rose from either side of his hips and joined over his waist. Then the floor on which he lay began to turn over. The clamps held his body firmly in place, though his head drooped at the end of a lax-muscled neck. The floor completed its rollover, and he stared into total darkness. The floor descended slowly, smoothly, straight down inside the walls of a circular shaft. Salvo knew he should be terrified, imagining what awaited him at the bottom. He doubted it would be as merciful as a single bullet to the brain. More than likely, he would be slowly crushed, pulverized like a slab of meat on a butcher's block. Perhaps he would be lowered onto a forest of razor-pointed spikes, impaled by fractions over a period of hours. Although he easily conjured up the images of such details, he was unable to respond to them in any meaningful emotional degree. One thought dominated. He wasn't supposed to die like this, and he felt more disappointed than frightened. Finally, he realized the drug compound that had turned his body into a sack of flour had also tranquilized him. Indifferently, he gazed at a portal irising open beneath him. The dim light emanated as an eerie blue-green glow. He felt himself lowered face down on a wheeled stretcher. Strong hands deftly positioned his head so he could breathe unimpeded. Salvo was borne swiftly down a short stretch of narrow corridor. Salvo didn't recognize the tune, if tune it was. Salvo rolled into a small room shaped like a hollow triangle, the 4 walls slanting up, presumably to meet in the center of the ceiling. Even though he could still roll his eyes, he couldn't see very much. Chrome-colored sockets of different diameters studded the walls. They looked strange and threatening, but he couldn't bring himself to wonder or worry about their purpose. He glimpsed the white-sleeved arms hovering around and over his prone body. They cut away his uniform, stripping it from his arms and legs. His underclothes were methodically snipped apart, his boots pulled off. Salvo lay on his belly, naked, staring straight ahead. He saw only a small vid monitor module mounted on a wheeled tripod, cables snaking down from it to the floor. Seeing the vid screen made him think briefly about the Mesa Verde operation. Baron Cobalt had given him the task of providing clean genetic material to the Dulce installation. Salvo had assigned the gathering of the material to Milton Reith, but when the Sligger encountered problems supplying healthy bodies, he began substituting dregs, diseased outcasts of the Hell Zones. Aloof, he wondered if Baron Cobalt intended to practice the let the punishment fit the crime philosophy by dissecting him and transporting his blood, soft organs, and bone marrow to the installation in New Mexico. Of course, he reminded himself, such action presupposed the destruction Cain, Grant, and the Baptiste whore inflicted on the facility had been repaired. From what he had been told, the incubation chamber had been all but obliterated and the cryogenic storage area severely damaged. Above him, from the center of the ceiling, by the sound of it, came a hissing squeak. A sling and strap harness descended into his restricted field of vision. Hands fitted themselves under his arms and hips, rolling him over, heaving him up into a sitting posture. He saw the figures with the white gloves. 3 slender shapes stood around him. Since their features were completely concealed by white linen skull caps, surgical masks, and round-lensed goggles, He based his assessment of their sex due to the flat fall of the gowns covering their bodies. He felt a distant relief they weren't women. Many years ago, shortly after receiving his duty badge at age 16, his first assignment had been to the intel section. His superior officer, an affected pompous martinet named Landenberg, personally supervised the questioning of attractive female suspects. It was easy for Salvo to ingratiate himself with Landenberg, whose primary personality trait was an overweening, even monstrous vanity. Landenberg arranged circumstances so his flattery-prone protégé could lose his virginity in the line of duty. When Landenberg received a mandatory administrative transfer, Salvo took over his duties. He found a certain luxury in them, until a night one of the prisoners managed to free herself long enough to sink her teeth into his penis. After his recovery from what passed as reconstructive surgery, he asked for and received a transfer from the intel section. The vivid recollection of that instant of shock, agony, and blood had prevented him from indulging in a similar luxury with Bridget Baptiste while she was in custody. The white-gowned attendants lifted Salvo's 210 pounds seemingly without strain and placed him in the sling, strapping him securely, fastening clamps to his wrists and ankles. His buttocks and legs sagged through the straps toward the floor. One of the masked figures held up a small hypodermic syringe. Salvo watched as the point of the needle plunged into his right arm, piercing the collateral radial artery inside the elbow joint. When the needle was withdrawn, a tiny pinpoint of blood oozed out. A gloved hand swabbed it away with a tuft of cotton pinched between thumb and forefinger. The three attendants stepped to the sockets on the walls, then posed motionless, their glassy, goggled eyes fixed on Salvo as if they were waiting for a signal. A moment later, the trio moved simultaneously, adjusting the ring collars of the sockets and drawing out segmented conduits made of flexible, silvery metal. They reminded Salvo of tentacles. The attendants attached a pair of the conduits to the clamps around his wrists, and another pair was affixed to his ankles. An attendant pulled a fifth tentacle toward Salvo's face. He eyed its blunt tip. The masked figure twisted a metal cuff at its end, and an aperture opened. A cluster of small, jointed, spidery legs sprang out, like the petals of a particularly ugly flower. The legs spread to encompass the width of his face. Tiny extruder hooks dug into the flesh of his cheeks and temples, catching and holding tightly. With a peculiar hiss, the conduits attached to his wrists and ankles began to retract into their sockets. Salvo felt the strain in his muscles, and he wondered what purpose disjointing him could possibly serve. He couldn't feel pain anyway. Salvo hung awkwardly in the sling, limbs spread-eagled. He peered out between the chromed spider legs. Nothing happened for what seemed like a long time. Then he became aware of pain. The induced lethargy and paralysis slowly seeped out of his body and mind. Whatever he had been injected with, it counteracted the effects of the tranquilizing compound. Although he had been unable to react emotionally at the time, his brain had recorded every minutia of his experiences. And he was finally allowed to respond. Salvo accomplished nothing but a fireburst of pain. From the center of the conduit's aperture extended a straight, tiny filament, like a thread made of steel. He tried to watch its approach, but his eyes crossed and his vision blurred. He felt the light touch at the bridge of his nose.
Salvo, you have no conception of the depth of my sorrow that you are here. The grief is almost more than I can bear.
Lord Mayor, you must allow me the opportunity to speak.
Certainly I will. That is why you are here. You must speak, and you must speak the truth. However, I hope you sympathize with my difficulty in separating the truth from untruths. I propose to end that confusion quite decisively. Do you know where you are? Despite what you may think, this is not a torture chamber like the crude little dungeons you maintain on E-level. No, this is my own private surgery. Would it surprise you to learn that even the barons fall prey to illnesses, to injuries, to weaknesses of mortal flesh?
Salvo kept his eyes closed, wishing he could shut out the Baron's voice.
Yes. Though I am representative of the new human, improved and modified, I am frail. I am vulnerable. Obviously, it would not do for the Commonweal to know the Barons are as mortal as they are. If the Apelings who grub in the pits or slouch through the Outland should learn the Barons can sicken and die just like them, keeping humanity in heavy harness would be very difficult. Do you not agree? Thusly, we have private and very secret medical facilities at our disposal. To date, I have never had to make use of them except when Cain...
Baron Cobalt's words broke off. Salvo's mind raced to try to explain the sudden lapse in conversation.
I really don't know all the capabilities of this facility, though I admit to a certain fascination with them. Let us both collaborate to divine their mysteries.
Salvo's eyes snapped open. He felt a cold metal pressure probing between his protruding buttocks.
No, stop! I'll tell you anything!
I know that, Salvo. But do not expect me to ask you questions. Whatever I want to know, you will volunteer. Perhaps not gladly, but at least there will be little confusion in separating the falsehoods from the facts.
The tiny filament poised at the bridge of his nose suddenly plunged through the lump of flesh between his eyes.
Of course, the process of clearing away confusion is accomplished slowly. It takes time. Therefore, I will leave you in the gifted hands of my surgeons. When the process is completed, they will alert me. You will be a cooperative patient, won't you? Splendid.
Cain blinked, and the world swam mistily back to reality. He swayed on unsteady legs, a bit surprised that he managed to land the Mattrans jump still standing. Usually, no matter how jumpers arranged themselves before a transit, they arrived at their destinations flat on their backs. This time, Cain remained upright, but he faced away from the door, staring at the pewter-colored armaglass back wall. He felt remarkably clear-headed. Sometimes, even the cleanest of jumps had debilitating effects. Grant, DeFore, and Domi stirred on the hexagonal floor plates, their prone bodies surrounded by fading wisps of vapor. Cain had once overheard a discussion between Lakesh and Bry about the source and substance of the Mattrans mist. Lakesh had gone into an abstruse dissertation about plasma waveforms that only resembled vapor.
Two arms, two legs. Thank God.
Domi uncoiled from the floor with an effortless, fluid grace, ruby eyes sharp and clear. She nodded curtly to Cain, an acknowledgement she felt fine. Grant lifted his head, glanced around, then climbed to his feet.
Not bad. What do you feel, DeFore?
A slight headache, a touch of vertigo. Nothing like genuine jump sickness, I imagine.
That's for damn sure.
Cain repressed a smile. Grant always held up their jump to Russia as the standard for bad transits. The Cerberus Gateway Link had been unable to establish a link with the Russian unit's auto-sequence initiators. The Matterstream carrier wave modulations couldn't be synchronized, which resulted in a severe bout of jump sickness, vomiting, excruciating head pain, weakness, and hallucinations.
What about you, Cain? Stimulants and pain relievers still holding up?
Mm-hmm.
Cain took a swift, appraising look around. The anteroom was small, just large enough for a round marble table and two chairs. A green-tinted light strip ran the length of the ceiling to the door. He saw no vid spy eyes on the ceiling.
It looks clear.
Hand on the copperhead, he stepped out, feeling the point man's tension build in him like subtle electricity. Bent in a half-crouch, he walked cautiously, heel to toe, to the doorway. Grant followed him. DeFore and Domi remained behind in the chamber. Listening, not thinking, Cain thumbed the solenoid stud on the doorframe, unlocking the panel. The door slid open, just enough to see what lay beyond it. As he expected, he saw a small control room, less than half the size of the one at Cerberus. Cain moved among the banks of electronic equipment. At the second door, he saw only a span of empty corridor curving away to the left. Turning, he gestured to Grant, who gestured to Domi and DeFore, still waiting watchfully in the jump chamber. They came out and joined Kane.
Where are we?
I haven't the faintest idea. The corridor dead ends here, so we've only got one direction to choose. If the place is spy-wired, we'll just have to act like we know where we're going. Standard deployment.
Big neg on that. I'll take point.
Kane started to object, then shrugged. In a hard contact penetration, he always assumed the point position. His senses were uncannily acute when something nasty lurked around a corner, but in these circumstances, his lack of a badge could alert even the most dim-witted baronial guardsman. As it was, mags in full armor were not exactly common sights in the administrative monolith, certainly not on A-level. The standard magistrate duty uniform consisted of a gray bodysuit and a long black Kevlar weave overcoat. However, an armored magistrate was a fearsome figure, exploiting the instinctive human terror of the unknown. The armor's psychological effect might buy them precious time. Kane handed the motion detector to Grant, who slipped it over his left wrist, where it wouldn't interfere with the operation of the Sin Eater's spring-powered holster. Domi and DeFore fell in behind Grant. Kane brought up the rear. Grant opened the door all the way and walked out into the corridor.
No motion. It's clean.
The four of them negotiated the corridor, following the curving wall. The floor was of a shiny green material cut in square tiles. They searched for but saw no spy islands as anywhere. They reached an open archway, and after consulting the motion detector, Grant led them beneath it. The foursome traversed a long series of arches. Nowhere did they see any windows or doors. Each arch merely opened up into another stretch of silent hallway.
Why don't we come to a room?
Kane didn't answer. His sole visit to A-level was nearly a half year ago. During the trip, he had been forced to wear opaque goggles. After his induction into the Trust, he was so emotionally numbed and physically enervated, he had paid scant attention to the return route. He retained vague recollections of archways and feebly lit chambers, but very little beyond that.
Two contacts, 10 yards, approaching our position. No place for us to hide.
We'll brazen it out.
That's your solution for everything.
They began walking again, a stiffness born of fear apparent in DeFore's back and shoulders. In the passage between two archways appeared a pair of men in white uniform jackets, red trousers, and polished black knee boots. Kane's lips twisted in a smirk. Magistrates held baronial guardsmen in contempt, and they certainly had no patience with their studied arrogance. Guardsmen's duties consisted of strutting around A-level, opening doors, and sneering at the infrequent visitor seeking an audience with Baron Cobalt. No one knew the number of guardsmen or how one was selected. Certainly, they didn't come from the ranks of the magistrate division. The two guardsmen were identically trim and blue-eyed, though one had blonde hair and the other black. They made up for the color difference by styling their hair the same way. Both of their faces were clear of complexion, subtly sculpted to be the epitome of male good looks. When they caught sight of Grant, their blue eyes widened and then narrowed to slits. Kane hoped they could pass each other without question. The blonde guardsman raised an imperious hand, palm outward.
Halt! What business do you magistrates have at this hour?
It's magistrate business, and none of yours.
If your business is in regard to your commanding officer, then you will share his fate once the Baron hears of this intrusion.
Grant came to a sudden halt, so suddenly that Domi nearly trod on his heels. The guardsman kept his arm extended, his middle finger only 2 inches from Grant's polycarbonate-sheathed chest.
Commanding officer? Salvo?
Who else? Do you entertain the absurd notion of intervening on his behalf with the Lord Baron?
Salvo is here. Explain.
The dark-haired man's eyes flicked away from Grant toward Kane. They passed over Domi and DeFore.
Why are magistrates escorting a medic and custodian? You explain.
Of course.
Grant spun toward the second man, positive the first guardsman would hit the floor unconscious. His left leg arced toward the blonde guardsman's crotch. He caught only the briefest of glimpses of the dark-haired man stumbling back a pace, not falling or even appearing to be surprised. The sight shocked Grant, skewing his timing and balance. His boot missed, impacting on the guard's pelvic bone instead. A fist seemed to come from nowhere. Amoeba-shaped floater swam across Grant's eyes, and the not-quite-snug helmet wobbled on his head. Kane could scarcely believe it when Grant went down. The guardsmen moved swiftly, bounding away from one another. All three rounds missed. The black-haired guardsman stumbled, arms windmilling, his boot soles squeaking on the floor, seeking purchase. When the man regained his balance, he rushed toward Kane. He had little time to think and even less to act. Kane hurled himself to one side, away from Domian DeFore, noticing that the blonde man was kicking the fallen Grant. Kane squeezed off another tri-burst at his guardsman. He weaved and dodged without breaking stride. A bullet ripped a chunk of flesh from the web of the man's left hand, between thumb and forefinger. The baronial guardsman charged into Kane with the full force of his weight, knocking him off his feet. Kane reached for his fallen copperhead and snatched a fistful of uniform jacket sleeve. He tried to drag the man down with him. That was a mistake. The guardsman obligingly allowed himself to be dragged, crashing his body weight against Kane, its full force concentrated in the knee pounding at the center of his abdomen. With a quiver of shock, Kane felt the polycarbonate bend inward at the moment and point of impact. His thoughts wheeled like a flock of panicked birds. The guardsman weighed far more than he guessed, probably tipping the scales at close to 300 pounds of solid muscle. He was incredibly strong, preternaturally swift and agile. With a quiver of loathing, Kane realized the baronial guardsmen were not selected. They were made. Kane's left hand broke upward, clawing at the side of the guard's head. The guardsman did not show pain. Very white and even teeth flashed in a cold, mocking grin. He jammed his thumbs between the underjaw locking guard of Kane's helmet and heaved. As the blonde guardsman's boot snapped toward his face, Grant's hands came together, catching the ankle and twisting savagely. The guardsman spun in the direction of the twist, leaping from the floor in a graceful pirouette. As he revolved in midair, his free foot slashed sideways across Grant's visor. Grant released the ankle, one hand realigning the helmet, the other whipping up his copperhead. The blonde man staggered. The blonde guard clutched at his throat. Gobbets of muscle and tissue tore away. A few globs of blood spewed from his lips, but he didn't fall. The guardsman's left cheek erupted in a scarlet gelatinous spray, his perfectly shaped nose vanishing in a bloody smear. The baronial guardsman's blue eyes registered outraged astonishment. He fell backward, spurting blood from the face and mouth, fingers snatching futilely at the air as if to grab handfuls of life. Domi pivoted, framing the back of the black-haired guardsman's head in the combat master's sights. He was too busy trying to tear off Kane's helmet or head to react to the sound of the shot. The 248-grain bullet punched a ragged path through the cleft in the man's chin, shattering his excellent teeth. A torrent of blood and bone splinters cascaded through his mouth and nostrils. The .45-caliber round crashed into the occipital area of the guardsman's head, ripping an untidy groove in his carefully groomed hair. The impact of the slug drove him forward, and the broad cranial bone at his hairline split open. Kane and Grant scrambled erect at the same time, both breathing hard, staring at each other in shock.
Brazen it out my ass.
Domi swung her blaster to cover first one corpse, then the other, her face as expressionless as a porcelain mask.
Bad men. Very bad men.
Kane saw no reason to respond. Automatically, he checked his wrist gron. Less than 30 seconds had elapsed since they first exchanged words with the guardsman. The time compression of combat was always disconcerting.
You call them show soldiers?
Well, they did put on a show, didn't they?
The bastards nearly chilled us. That's not my idea of entertainment. Domi, I should ream you out for pulling and firing an unsilenced blaster without an express order.
Didn't figure you'd mind.
You figured right. Thanks.
As Kane bent to pick up his copperhead, he saw a small shard of scarlet-tinted skull near the guardsman's head. He picked it up, shook off a gummy strand of brain matter, inspected it, and tossed it to DeFore.
What's that look like to you?
She examined the thick, gray-white chunk of material, turning it over in her hands. Her eyes narrowed. Stooping cautiously over the blonde-haired corpse, she opened his uniform jacket, peered at the penetration wounds made by Grant's subgun, then gingerly probed his chest and ribcage.
So much for natural selection.
What?
The bones of your show soldiers are bonded with some kind of ceramic, doubling their density and strength. The muscle attachments are correspondingly thick and strong. The epidermis and body wall is very tough, especially where the inner organs have to be protected. See, there's no transient cavitation around the bullet perforations. They're like the Übermensch, the Superman the Nazis dreamed of creating over 2 centuries ago.
Supermen serving as bodyguards. Didn't set their sights very high, now did they?
I doubt they had much of a choice. Their IQs are probably somewhere below their shoe sizes. They were bred to be human gorillas, not physicists.
No further motion detected. Think anyone heard the shots?
Let's be optimistic and say no. Do you have a read on what they said about Salvo?
I hope it means the son of a bitch is drowning in the barren shit.
But why? He told me Baron Cobalt put him in charge of the Grudge Task Force. That shows he has confidence in him.
Maybe the Baron isn't happy with his performance. You and Bridget got away from him, remember?
That was weeks ago. If that's the reason, he would have double-dipped Salvo long before now. Something is definitely going on.
Whatever's going on, it has nothing to do with our mission.
You seem pretty sure of that. I wish I could be.
Nothing could be done to hide the corpses of the guardsmen, so they left them where they lay. They walked in the direction from which the 2 men had come, Grant resuming point man position. Out of habit, Kane kept checking their backtrack. He wouldn't have been overly surprised to see one or both of the baronial guardsmen stirring, rising to their feet. Their very existence shook his confidence in himself, and he wondered why such superior specimens of humanity were created solely to safeguard the Baron. If only 50 of them were introduced into the ranks of the Magistrate Division, the need for high-powered blasters and armor would dwindle. But as DeFore had said, their intellects were wanting. If the baronial guardsmen had possessed intelligence to match their physiques, they could pose a very real threat to the security of the Vills. Superior abilities always bred superior ambitions. Lakesh once commented that the first genetic engineers, back in the 20th century, had met powerful and outspoken opposition. But the opposition didn't prevail. The temptation to play God was too seductive. As Lakesh had explained, if the Directorate's plans for humankind succeeded, in 100 years, there would be many humankinds. The arched hallway ended in a small modular chamber. At the center of it, a spiral staircase curled down into a round opening.
It's all clear. Let's move downstairs.
Careful now.
The quartet crept down the stairs one by one, 6 feet apart, walking stealthily on the balls of their feet. Though the steps didn't creak beneath their weight, everyone's breathing sounded frighteningly loud to Kane. Every second, he expected to see the blaze of a blaster from the gloom below them. To his surprised relief, the stairway's spiral ended in a low-ceilinged corridor. The 4 of them gathered at the bottom step. Grant looked up. The ceiling was only 3 feet above his head.
Hey, Kane. You remember coming down or going upstairs last time you were here?
No.
3 contacts. They're not moving fast or far.
Domi, leather that cannon. Let us handle this.
Like you did the guards?
The foursome crept down the corridor. As with the upper level, the walls were painted a pale metallic green. The light strips exuded a blue glow. No vid spy eyes hung from the ceiling, but they passed beneath a round portal slightly recessed in a metal frame, 7 feet in diameter. Kane had no idea whatsoever of its purpose, but he felt distinctly uneasy walking beneath it. The passageway dog-legged to the right and ended at a set of swinging doors. Grant pointed to the motion detector, then to the doors. Kane nodded, understanding the 3 contacts were in the room beyond. Sidling up beside Grant, he took a position at the right-hand door. They swiftly hand-signed to one another, agreeing to enter quietly, stealthily. The hairs on the backs of their necks stood up as a jolt of adrenaline flooded their systems. Kane felt the blood pound in his temples. Kane's eyes adjusted to the change in lighting as he instantaneously took in the dimensions of the pyramid-shaped chamber. In a flash, his eyes registered fragmented images of 3 masked and gowned figures, of a cold white light reflecting from polished metal fixtures, of a naked, spread-eagled man writhing in a sling. A chrome-plated serpent arched in front of him, the metal spider legs sprouting from its head, hugging his face. Another gleaming serpent lay coiled on the floor beneath the man's buttocks, part of it stretched up and out. Its head was not visible, and Kane didn't want to speculate on where it might be. The three gowned and goggled figures reacted quickly to the sudden appearance of the black-armored intruder. They rushed to all points of the room. Kane put the targeting pipper on the nearest masked figure, the red kill dot blooming on the white gown like a tiny pinhead of blood. He shifted the barrel, retargeted, and fired again, the pipper flicking across a white-clothed back. The third masked figure reached for a red button set high on the far wall. The pipper from Grant's auto-targeter touched the skull cap. Kane stepped farther into the room, swinging the silenced bore of his subgun from left to right. He saw no other targets, so he focused his attention on the man hanging helpless in the sling. His dark eyes rolled wildly toward Kane, blinking back tears. Incoherent sounds bubbled from his ashen lips. Kane leaned forward and saw the tiny filament embedded in the fleshy mound at the bridge of his nose. Grasping the metal tentacle at the point where the cluster of legs sprouted, he gave it an experimental tug. Crimson points appeared in the sallow flesh pierced by the small hooks.
Be careful, for God's sake.
What for? You think I give a shit what happens to you? I only wish I had time to stay and watch your brains get cored out. Your bowels, too.
The Baron, he could be watching.
Both Kane and Grant swiveled their heads, looking all over the room. A miniature spy eye lens protruded from the ceiling.
Baron Cobalt rigged you like this?
Yes.
Why?
Get me loose and I'll tell you.
You shit-faced son of a sticky whore.
Kane, we've got no time for this. Remember the mission.
Do you know where Lakesh is?
So you do know him. I was right.
I won't ask you again.
Let me loose. I'll take you to him.
Fuck you. We'll find him ourselves. We know he's on E-level.
No. It's worse than you think. He's hurt. He may die.
Domi stepped aggressively toward Salvo, the combat master's boar centered on his naked chest. DeFore followed her.
You tortured him. We know. You kill my people in Kuprum. Lakesh dies. I big time, long time chill you.
Salvo could not cringe away, but a new wave of fear rippled through the mud-colored pools of his eyes. They flicked frantically to Grant.
Grant, you've always been a reasonable man. Steady and smart. If the Baron doesn't know you're here yet, he will soon. If you turn me loose, I swear I'll help you get out of here and save Lakesh.
Kane tells me there's a secret lift tube on A-level. Do you know where it is?
I can't tell you. I'll have to show you. Now get me loose, please.
DeFore, do you know what this equipment on him is?
She eyed the lower conduit and shook her head in puzzlement.
Unless Baron Cobalt is curious about the condition of Salvo's colon, I see no medical reason for it. My guess is that it's simply for humiliation purposes, maybe to cause pain.
Does that sound reasonable, Salvo? Are you humiliated yet?
DeFore examined the flexible metal tentacle attached to Salvo's face.
I think I know what this is. An advanced psychosurgery instrument designed to deliver a tiny electronic device to the brain.
An implant? Like the kind that Tushagun used to control his followers?
I don't think so, since the microneedle is aligned with the so-called silent area of the brain.
Did the Baron tell you what he was doing to you, Salvo?
All he said was that he could learn all he needed to know from me without asking any questions.
Look!
She pointed at the blurry images flickering over a small vid screen mounted on a wheeled tripod. Shifting bands of color shimmered across it. A distorted image formed and dissolved so quickly, Kane caught only the briefest, almost subliminal glimpses of it. But he was sure he had seen himself, wearing his gray uniform beneath his long mag coat, sitting cross-legged in a chair. The patterns of light and color wavered again, then resolved into a ghostly vision of Baptiste, hair in disarray, looking up in fear, blood streaming from her nose. An instant later, the screen filled with Lakesh's face, racked with pain.
That thing in Salvo's head is an organometallic synapse, making a link between the brain and a computer database. It's recording his memories.
How is that possible?
Linking the human brain to a computer was a theoretical study in artificial intelligence back in the 20th century. Biotechnology melded with cybernetics. In principle, there's no reason why information stored in the brain can't be transmitted to a computer.
Get it off!
Stop! Though the brain feels no pain, violent removal of the link might cause permanent shock. You could die.
In that case, let him do it.
Grant closed his big hand around Salvo's wrist and pried his fingers loose from the spidery legs.
Somebody better think of something fast. Like Salvo said, the Baron could learn we're here any second.
Kane quickly studied the tentacle and claw device, then gripped the metal cuff around the aperture and gave it a clockwise twist. The hook-tipped spider legs spread open, and the filament withdrew from the bridge of Salvo's nose. A tiny drop of blood oozed from the puncture. Scarlet strings crawled from the six lacerations on his face.
Get my other hand loose.
Say please.
I'm sorry. Please get me loose.
Salvo massaged his wrists, obviously embarrassed by his nudity, and fighting hard to regain control of his emotions.
Someone will have to find me some clothes. Stat, mine are ruined.
Grabbing him in a painful grip at the back of his short neck, Kane forced his head in the direction of the nearest masked and gowned corpse.
There you are. Just your size, too. Be quick about it.
He pushed Salvo to his knees beside the stiff form. Kane stepped quickly over, on the verge of hitting Salvo again. He saw what had evoked the outburst. Instead of bullet-flayed and bloody flesh beneath the gown, chromed steel gleamed in the overhead lights.
What the hell? That's not a man. It's some kind of machine.
Defoe came to his side, stared for a speechless second, then stooped to pluck away the mask, cap, and goggles. The head was like a human skull molded of burnished chrome, with small red photoreceptors set in deep sockets. The mouth hung half open, showing silvery teeth in a macabre grin. The tubular neck was articulated, like the segmented tentacle-like conduits in the room. The chest looked disproportionately broad, and it sported three bullet punctures. By peering through them, Kane discerned a glitter of broken circuitry.
A robot, known in cybernetic circles as a droid. Lakesh told me the military fooled around with robotic security forces to install in the Totality Concept redoubts. They ended experimentation in the late 1990s because they didn't have the ability to generalize.
That's bad for a droid?
Bad for people, more like it. The sect droids tended to chill any personnel who even slightly matched their programmed enemy profile. Lakesh said he saw a test where a droid blew away a congressional aide because he wore a mustache similar to a known terrorist. Good thing you shot it here. That's where its comp controls are located. The head is probably superfluous, mainly for symmetry.
Nice place, A-level. I wonder what else the Baron has tucked away up here. A sticky masseuse?
Domi sprawled awkwardly forward, arms flung out. As she fell, all of them saw the four rents slashed in the back of her coverall. Behind her stood a droid, its head canted at an unnatural angle, flopping limply on a bullet-smashed neck joint. Light glittered from the four razor-sharp blades projecting from the fingers of its right glove. It moved swiftly toward Domi. The bladed hand swept up in a vicious arc. Kane and Grant fired their copperheads in unison. The droid froze, completely immobile, its arm raised to slash. Defoe quickly knelt beside Domi, pulling her to a sitting position. The girl winced, biting her lip as the medic examined the oozing lacerations on her back. Crimson lines shone startlingly bright against the bone whiteness of her skin.
It's superficial. Only the top epidermal layer was penetrated. She'll heal without any perceivable scarring.
Defoe sterilized Domi's cuts with antiseptic and sprayed them with a film of liquid bandage. She climbed stiffly to her feet, eyeing the motionless droid with loathing.
All right, Salvo, you're dressed. Now, show us the way out.
You never said how you got here. I guess there's a gateway unit I don't know about, right?
Show us the way out, or I'll kill you. Ugly.
Mr. Grant, if you let him touch me again, I promise you you'll never reach Lakesh.
Grant looked to be seriously pondering Salvo's ultimatum.
Fine. I'll see to it he won't touch you again.
Salvo's mouth dropped open. Kane reached down and hauled him roughly to his feet by a fistful of gown.
Come on, the way out.
Nodding in resignation, Salvo shuffled toward the double doors. He led them down the corridor in the direction they had come. Kane was about to order him to halt when Salvo stopped beneath the disc-shaped portal on the ceiling. He pointed to it.
That's a lift tube. It brought me down here from the Baron's reception area.
There's gotta be another way up.
There probably is, but we don't have the time to look for it. Just because you blasted the vid-eye doesn't mean the Baron isn't always aware of what we're doing.
The sickly blue light strip did unflattering things to Salvo's sallow complexion and dark eyes. He kept twisting his head to look in both directions, and a trembling seized him. Salvo was on the brink of hysteria. Kane gripped his right shoulder, digging his fingers painfully into a clump of ganglia. Salvo tensed under the touch, but Kane held him fast.
Find your spine, Salvo. Be more afraid of me than of Baron Kobold. Yes.
Releasing him, Kane tilted his head back to study the ring collar around the portal. Moving a few inches to the center of it, he lifted his left hand and waved it back and forth.
Figured there had to be a photoelectric sensor.
Recessed slightly inside the mouth of the opening, they saw a flat disc with an arrangement of metal clamps protruding from it.
The thing will flip over once it reaches another floor, at least two above us. That's the Baron's audience area and the location of the lift.
It was decided Grant would make the initial recon, staying in contact with Kane via the helmet comlink. Forming a stirrup with his hands, Kane heaved Grant up high enough to grip the largest clamp. Kane stood beneath the open portal, watching, feeling the chill finger of tension stroke at the buttons of his spine.
What's going on, Grant?
Like Salvo said, it's turning over.
For a moment, a circle of light, bisected by a dark line, glowed, then vanished.
Zone is clear. No motion contacts. There's a button on the floor here. It probably sends the lift back down. It works. All of you can come up at the same time.
Although apprehension showed in DeFore's eyes, she allowed Kane to hoist her up to grab hold of the wrist shackles. Domi, the smallest of the group, lithely bounded up to grip the ankle clamps. Kane helped Salvo reach the flattened U of steel that had crossed his middle, then used his extended hand to pull himself up beside Salvo.
Kind of like the old days, isn't it?
Not the old days I remember.
Salvo looked away. The time it took to traverse the shaft was very brief. Kane's arms and hands weren't even feeling the strain of supporting his weight when the platform began its rollover. Grant helped DeFore into the small dome chamber. Domi sprang to her feet with a flourish, as if she was showing off for Grant's benefit. The quintet moved into a tunnel-like passage, Grant keeping one eye on the motion detector. When they emerged into a feebly lit, arched room, Kane restrained a shudder of repellent recognition.
Take us to the elevator.
Salvo looked around indecisively, saying nothing.
The only reason you're alive is because you said you knew the way. Show us now and live, or don't and die. There is no middle ground.
Salvo shuffled forward, Grant walking beside him. Like the gateway unit floor, they passed under numerous archways, though these were broader, taller, more ornate in construction and design. The lighting was barely above a gray gloom. As they moved along, Kane's flesh crawled under his armor. He understood Salvo's awe-filled dread of Baron Kobold, even if he had little patience for it. A lifetime of conditioning made all the Vilbred susceptible to the Baron's theatrical trappings. They stimulated and exploited all the primitive archetypal fears locked within the human psyche. Even the memory of his hand locked in a stranglehold around Baron Kobold's throat did little to bolster Kane's own courage. Salvo suddenly came to a halt. Across a broad hall, through an archway, loomed huge gold and ivory-chased double doors. Kane recognized them.
Aren't there always a pair of guardsmen posted on the other side?
When I came here a while ago, only one was on duty.
According to the motion detector, if he's there, he's not moving.
They crossed the hall and stopped at the doors. Kane listened intently, shook his head to indicate he heard nothing, then exchanged quick hand signals with Grant. Gesturing to the others to back away and spread out, Grant faced the right-hand door. Kane half-crouched behind him, Copperhead at his shoulder. Brilliant light spilled from the chandelier-illuminated foyer beyond, silhouetting the burly baronial guardsman as he peered into the gloom. The expression on his face was one of almost comical wonder. His expression didn't alter, even when the red laser light flashed onto his forehead. Grant grabbed him by his jacket, yanking him forward. He noted fleetingly that the back of his skull bulged unnaturally. The subgun's round had penetrated the thick cranial bone, but had lost its velocity in the process, pushing the man's brains ahead of it in a thick wad. Still, he'd been killed. Grant deposited him in a patch of shadow.
The lift is out the doors to our left and up a ramp. I'm not sure if it'll take us directly to E-level, but there's no reason why it shouldn't. The trouble is, we can only hope two of us at a time.
Who's with Lockish right now?
Pollard.
Figures.
He's waiting for me in Lockish's cell.
Which cell is that?
Third from the last on the left. Pollard expects me to bring a medic.
Good.
We'll have to stop on level C so I can get another uniform. I can't go into the cell blocks dressed like this.
You're damn right you can't, and you won't. Grant, DeFore, you two will go. We'll wait for you here.
No, you're not keeping me here. The Baron...
You're staying with us. If the mags get wind of this, you'll make a nice hostage.
But Pollard is expecting...
A medic. Escorted by a mag, not necessarily by you.
He'll recognize Grant.
Not necessarily. For his sake, you'd better hope his memory is as bad as his breath. Kane, how long will you wait for us to come back?
Until you come back. Long as it takes.
Look, why don't we three use the gateway and go back to wherever it is you came from? We'll wait for them there.
Like Domi said, as long as it takes. If the Baron finds us, I'll do my damnedest to finish what I started in Dulsa.
Grant nodded brusquely and handed his copperhead to Domi.
This is an assault weapon, so there'd be no reason for a mag to carry it in the monolith. To be on the safe side, let's observe comlink silence. Too much of a chance our frequencies could be monitored. When we're on our way back, I'll give you our one-word signal.
He slipped through the doors with Salvo. Turning one last time, he faced Kane and extended the index finger of his right hand and brought it smartly to his nose. Smiling, Kane returned the 1% salute, a gesture reserved for those missions with grave risks and a small chance of success. Their surroundings were plunged back into semi-darkness. They moved back to the archway across the hall. Salvo walked slowly, reluctantly. Kane knew why. Without Grant to act as something of a moderating influence, he feared to be alone with him and the fierce, ruby-eyed, ghost-pale girl. They took up position inside the arch. Kane slid up his helmet's visor and put on the dark vision glasses. The treated lenses weren't as effective as a functioning light enhancer, but they were better than relying solely on his eyes to penetrate the gloom. Fortunately, Domi's natural night vision was acute. Kane stepped in close to Salvo.
Now, you and I are going to pass the time with a talk. And like Baron Cobalt, I only want the truth. Unlike him, though, I won't implant a microneedle in your brain to get it. I'll implant a bullet.
Salvo tried to step back, but Domi prodded his kidneys with the muzzle of the copperhead.
What do you want to know?
We'll start with why and how you fell out of the Baron's favor. Now talk.
Grant hadn't been to E-level in well over 20 years. Descending swiftly, the elevator was so cramped he and DeFore were jammed against each other face to face. Though she didn't speak, he fancied he could feel her heart pounding even through his armor. He tried to think of something reassuring to say, but no words came to mind. To even suggest to her that a risk-fraught undertaking like this would turn out fine would be an outright lie. Being back in Koboldville in the administrative monolith evoked such a maelstrom of conflicting emotions he couldn't express a single one. Fear, anger, humiliation, homesickness, all of them warred within him. Grant and DeFore smelled the astringent odor of superheated metal. Once the door opened, the heat pressed into them like a physical assault. The elevator opened onto the main manufacturing facility of Koboldville. As Grant cautiously stepped out, he saw the door panel was concealed by a false wall hidden by spools of heavy-gauge cable and other stacked odds and ends. He looked around, found a small bucket, and used it to prop the door partially open. Quickly, he and DeFore skirted the edge of a vista of great machines toward the wide entranceway. Although they were well away from the main mechanical array, they felt their bones trembling in rhythm with the machinery. The close air was overlaid with the thick odors of grease and molten metal. Mechs and techs, wearing protective goggles and headgear, operated conveyor belts, drill presses, forges, smelters, and crucibles. Following the wall, Grant and DeFore made it through the square entrance and into a wide corridor. Both of them felt better as the noise and heat fell away behind them.
DeFore, if you're questioned by a mag, say Salvo sent you.
DeFore nodded, composing her face into a detached mask of professionalism. They turned at an L-junction and strode on. A gray-uniformed magistrate approached them, frowning over a sheaf of papers attached to a clipboard. Grant sensed DeFore tensing up.
Steady. Eyes front.
The magistrate glanced at them disinterestedly and passed by without a word. As they walked past the termination room, Grant noticed patches of fresh blood shining dully on the bullet-pocked wall, but he didn't point them out to DeFore. The corridor angled to the right and narrowed, lined on both sides by narrow metal doors. The effluvia of unwashed bodies, of excrement, urine, and blood was noxious.
Oh my God, Grant! I can't do this!
Steady. We're almost there.
The cells were unnumbered, so Grant counted them as they walked. Finally, they reached the door described by Salvo.
Who?
Grant nudged DeFore.
Medical services, dispatched by Salvo.
I expected Cale.
DeFore stepped in quickly. Grant followed, ducking his head beneath the low frame. He had to give DeFore credit. She looked at the wasted body on the bench that bore only a vague resemblance to Lakesh, but didn't react emotionally. Moving to his side, she opened the medical kit. Grant shifted his gaze to the electricity generator at the foot of the bench. As he figured, they'd been dosing Lakesh with Old Sparky, as the portable generators were called. He tried to keep his face averted from Pollard without being too obvious about it. Pollard's blunt features compressed in a scowl, due either to exasperation or suspicion.
Took your fucking time about getting down here. Where's Salvo?
Business with the Baron.
Pollard looked toward Grant, and his eyes narrowed.
It seemed like I ought to know you. Do I?
Do you?
Grant carefully watched the play of thoughts and emotions on Pollard's face, and saw the microsecond when Pollard found the match. His burly body stiffened, his small eyes widened, his nostrils flared. Pollard grunted as he was kicked in the groin, folding in the direction of the sudden, sickening pain. Grant dropped his right fist, weighted by the holstered Sin-Eater, like a pile driver on the back of his exposed neck.
This is for Mesa Verde. This is for Lakesh.
He slammed the heel of his left boot into the side of Pollard's head.
And this is because I feel like it.
Did you chill him?
Does it matter?
Not to me.
Once Grant got a look at Lakesh, he understood the woman's callous tone. He was ashen and gaunt, his bodysuit torn and soiled with his own wastes. Red abrasions showed bright on his skin. His eyes, puffed and bloodshot, held no recognition of the woman leaning over him.
Let's get these straps off.
DeFore removed a stethoscope from her kit and listened to Lakesh's heart, took his pulse, and examined his eyes, moving from one task to the other with a grim, brisk efficiency.
Can he be moved?
He has a touch of acidosis due to dehydration, agnosia, maybe even a pneumococcal infection. There's fluid on his lungs.
Can he be moved?
She took a small hypodermic syringe from the medical kit, holding it up to the feeble light for a moment.
He shouldn't be.
That's not what I asked.
Rolling up Lakesh's right sleeve, she injected the amber-colored contents of the syringe into his arm.
I can't find any broken bones, so yes, he can be moved. Though as a medic, I'd be remiss if I recommended it. I'm giving him a shot of antibiotics, then I'll administer a stimulant compound and an analgesic for pain. There's not much I can do to rehydrate him, except to give him an alkalinizing solution for the acidosis.
The way you're juicing him up, he may just float out of here.
Let me do my job.
Grant occupied himself by frisking Pollard, making sure he wasn't carrying a comm unit. The pockets of his uniform were empty, except for a pair of nylon wrist cuffs. Pollard still lived. Grant knew a dozen ways to chill him without using his knife or a blaster. He considered his methods.
Luck be a lady tonight.
Grant stood up and leaned over Lakesh. His roomy blue eyes contained a dim spark, but they were still glazed and unfocused.
What's he saying?
He's singing. Lakesh! Lakesh! Lakesh!
Lakesh's head rolled and wobbled on his neck.
Such extreme criticisms of my song stylings are unnecessary.
Dufour leaned forward, putting both hands on either side of his face.
Who are you?
My name is Mohandas Lakesh Singh. I was born in...
Who am I?
Your name is Dufour. You were born 35 years ago in Ragnarville of the genotype...
Do you know where you are? What's happened to you?
Very clearly. But I do not know how long I have been here.
3 days. I'm going to sit you up. Grant, give me a hand.
Lakesh's eyes opened, registering the big black figure in armor looming over him.
Friend Grant is here, too. Imagine that. How was the Emerald Isle, friend Grant?
Green.
He helped Dufour raise the man to a sitting position.
Darlingest Domi, dearest Bridget, friend Kane.
Kane and Domi are here, waiting for us on A-level. Bridget is back at Cerberus.
You traced me through the transponder?
Yeah.
Grant briefly contemplated voicing a derogatory opinion about Lakesh's secretiveness, but decided E-level wasn't the place.
We're taking you out of here, but it may be dangerous.
Out of here? Of course. The gateway on A-level. How do we get there? Oh, that's right. The lift.
His eyes squinted in the direction of Pollard's gray supine shape.
Without my glasses, I can't see very well. Please tell me that's Salvo.
Sorry, it's Pollard.
Salvo could come back at any second.
Salvo's taken care of. In fact, without him, I'm not sure if we'd have been able to reach you.
I don't understand.
Never mind that now. Try to stand up.
With her help, Lakesh put his feet on the floor. He stood carefully, swaying back and forth as if he stood on a rocking boat deck. Experimentally, he took a few tottering steps.
Oh, I'm very weak.
And you stink like a swampy's hind end, too, but neither can be helped. Put your hands behind your back.
Why?
You're gonna put on these cuffs. You're my prisoner. That's how we'll get you out of here.
What if I'm recognized?
I don't think it's common knowledge Salvo had the senior archivist imprisoned down here. Besides, the way you look right now, Baron Cobalt wouldn't know you.
Reluctantly, Lakesh put his hands at the small of his back, crossing his wrists. Grant slipped the cuffs around them, not tightening or locking them into place. If Lakesh needed to use his hands, he could wriggle free in a matter of seconds.
I'm feeling a little better. I don't hurt as much. My thinking seems clearer.
That's a euphoric reaction to the drugs. All they do is mask your pain and overall debilitated condition. Take it easy.
Oh, nonsense. I can whip... Oh.
His knees buckled and Grant caught him.
Let's go. Don't stop for anything or anyone. If we're questioned, we'll do like Kane says and brazen it out.